woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Oh. Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sun.
Well, and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Samuel. Ricardo on the board. S&P futures are, well, let's find out what they are. S&P futures down 6, NASDAQ futures down 18. This is after a new record yesterday in the Dow, but the rest of the market was actually down, so... Down a little bit, not much. That's who we are. We have Professor Carl.
You do.
What is the... how come we don't have the money supply updated and it's already like the 27th of August here?
Well, why... Let me just ask you a question.
Yeah.
Why do you need the money supply numbers when you have the MTS?
MTS.
Yeah. You know, the... So, I don't know if you use Quicken or something like it to track your household.
All right. No. If I use one of those things, I have to use a calculator to add them up.
Well, see, I don't.
I get that.
Because I do use it. I've used Quicken since, you know, long... Well, actually, going back to before I was running an internet company. Personally, not as a, you know, as a business accounting package, but as a, you know, just for my household. Which, by the way, was where I got the thing I put up on X. Someone said, oh, no, grocery prices aren't really up by 100%. Oh, really, they're not? Okay, well, here's what I spent in 2000, and here's what I spent in 2023. Divide by 12.
Yeah.
By the way, that's more than a clean double, and the size of my household hasn't changed. You know, funny how computers are really good at adding things up, right?
Yep.
I mean, that's what they do best. And the MTS is basically that, a transaction category report. Okay, I mean, if you've ever used Quicken, you can go and say, itemize categories, you know, transaction level, right?
Yep.
For this date range. Punch in the date range, here it all is. And since I use plastic as a way to get my 1% cash back and things like this.
See, there's places that pay 3, you know.
Well, on some categories. Yeah. Right now, Discover's doing 5 on groceries. So, you know, for this 3 months until the end of the quarter, guess what I'm using for all my groceries, right? I
mean, you're gonna get 5%. Quarter before, they were 5 on gas.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, you know, I shift what I use, what card I use where, based on... you know, who gives me the better deal, right?
Anyway,
I mean,
you know,
but isn't that basic economics, Chief?
I yes, mean, you but know, how did, let me ask you a simple question, because I don't know. Who pays for that?
Well, all the people who run balances.
No, I mean, okay, they do. So it's not, the gas station's not giving them 5% off.
No, the reason that the companies do this, well, Discover... believes, now I don't know if, you know, I mean, Amex is 2% on groceries all the time. Okay, so if somebody else is 1, well, 2 beats 1, right? but Discover has this rolling calendar where every 3 months there's a
right.
different category.
I have one of those cards, a great card, by the way, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, by the way, I hate the idea that they're merging because they actually were a separate processor all the way back to when I was running.
I thought that was being held up.
It is. There's a, you know, the government saying that's, hey, wait a minute, that's antitrust. And yeah, it is. We'll see whether or not it actually gets blocked, but they're trying to block it. The which I think should be blocked because the competition's good for everybody.
Well, they do. They give you a credit report. They search the dark web for you every month. They do all kinds of stuff.
Oh yeah, no, and you don't have to pay anything extra for that. But see, all the security stuff is in their best interest, because if somebody gets your card number and uses it and it wasn't you, they eat it. You don't eat it. They eat it. So they're out of their mind not to be very proactive about those kinds of things, as is any other card issuer. The difference is they expose it where you can see it, but they're all doing that stuff because it's in their best interest. The thing that I think is so interesting, though, about this is the MTS, just this morning I put up a thing on the Jackson Hole confab. And the IRX, yeah, everybody is breathlessly, oh, the Fed's going to cut rates in September. Well, of course they are. Do you know why? The IRX right now is trading at 4.998. So if they took 25 basis points off, they'd be 5 to 5.25 instead of 5.25 to 5.5, which is right in the range of where rates have been trading for the last, 2 months.
Why don't...
But here's, Chief, the federal government right now, assuming that the next 2 months are no different than the last 10, right? Because we've got two more in the fiscal year. We got through July in the MTS. August, September, that's the end of the fiscal. As it stands right now, the federal government's running a 6.3% inflation rate in monetary terms. So they are injecting, they're spending 6.3% more as a percentage of GDP than is taken in taxes. And that is the inflation that the federal government, Congress, because Congress votes for this. Congress is forcing a 6.3 inflation rate into the system, which means that right now rates are negative.
I don't think there's any doubt about that. But I think we had a chalkboard. I would kind of debate that a little bit, because they are taxing. I mean, they are borrowing some of it. That does not go into inflation.
They're borrowing 6.3% of GDP, and all of that is going into inflation.
No, what I'm saying is, there's three ways they can spend money. All right, one is they tax it, which means they take money from other people and they spend it. So it's a net wash cash wise in terms of money supply.
Correct.
They can borrow it, which they've been doing, which again takes money out of your pocket and they spend it somewhere else. So that's a net wash money supply wise, or they can print it. I think they're borrowing some of that. The last 2 months, if you look, well, you go back actually 3 or 4 months, but you go back to the last 2 months, they're on a 4.7% money supply increase rate. So I'm going to say my rate would be more like 5 versus your 6.5, because I think they're borrowing the other 1.5.
Well, that's a question.
We're splitting hairs. The point is, they're putting money in the system,
right? And I would say that we're not only splitting hairs, we're playing wordsmithing games with definitions, because the premise of borrowing is that you will eventually pay it back.
Not in today's world.
Well, exactly. Okay, and oh, by the way. I don't remember if I mentioned this on the show. I probably did. There's been a lot of screaming about the commercial real estate marketplace and how it's absolutely critical that, you know, that the federal government and the Fed come in and rescue, you know, what is an ongoing disaster. And oh, by the way, the business model in the CRE space is that you borrow the money. And then every time that the bond, essentially what it is, right, you issued a bond, every time that comes due, you just roll it over. And, oh, by the way, the expense of that is now going up, and therefore all of these, you know, these properties are anywhere from underwater to disasters. And my answer to that is, excuse me, who was the bright bulb in the socket that believed that for all of eternity you could borrow, you know, $50 million to put a building up and never amortize that debt? Never. Under no circumstances. No, we're just going to pay the interest,
And then when the bond comes due, we'll refinance it and everything will be fine. That will never get out of control on us, which, by the way, is exactly what the federal government's been doing.
there are those snidely whiplash kind of guys that say the federal government is nothing more than a reflection of us.
Well, you know, isn't it funny how you get what you vote for, right? I mean, you know, one way or another.
Well, I mean, you look at my famous, they're not my favorite whipping boy, but the company I like to talk about, only because they're in the Chicago area, and I was involved in the mini crash in 89 on the floor when United Airlines was supposed to be taken over, and then they weren't. Then they went bankrupt after they stole all the money out of their pension plans back.
Yep.
So, I mean, it's been really a disaster of a company the whole way. In the last, since from 9/11 to, was it 2000 and... Not 2008. It was the COVID thing. They took more money, more cash came into the place, like they never had before. And they spent, you know, it's been a while, Carl. So I'll say this tongue in cheek. I think for a period of 10 or 12 years, they used all that dough to buy stock back.
Yeah.
And now I'm sitting there going, if you were on the board and you ended up with, you know, say $1 billion cash comes in one year, you and I might just be stupid enough, pain in the ass enough to say, why don't we do something intelligent, like the next time we pick up a plane, we actually just give Boeing a check instead of leasing it. I know it's going to take a long time, but over a period of next 10 years, maybe we actually own 25 planes or something along those lines. I mean, Carl, this is not just the government. This is everywhere, and there are people on the Council of Economic Advisors, people who have written books, that have said, as long as your debt is growing at 3% and you're growing at 3.1, you're okay. Problem is, everybody lies about it. I mean, Trump's group lied about the taxation and how that was going to benefit everybody. And these guys have been lying about the spending stuff. So they
and everybody lied about the so-called benefits of offshoring everything.
Yeah, we debate that back and forth, you know, privately among the Stacks and Jacks people. But I don't have that big of an issue with the intent when the result has been screwed up by other people. You know what I'm saying? The idea of putting industry in your next door neighbor with the idea that it would grow, and somehow or another they'd become more like us and not swimming across the river every night, and actually become customers. I'm not so sure that was an awful attempt in the first place. I mean, people are.
Oh no, Chief, I'm not arguing that the idea of finding ways to make the pie bigger is bad. Okay, finding ways to make the pie bigger, if you actually accomplish it, is good. I don't think anybody argues that, right? I mean, look, would I love it if the jungles of Mexico, Guatemala, El Salvador, Venezuela, and by the way, all the goons that are in those places, would I love it if those places turned into shining beacons on the hill? And there was love and puppies, and every time that you turned around, there was a dog at your feet licking your hand instead of trying to bite your ankle. Of course, I would. I think that that's a fantastic thing. It's not only good for American business people who would have more places to sell their stuff. It's also good for humanity.
Right.
All right. And so, I mean, you'd have to be out of your mind to argue against the idea. The problem is that we seem to get this wild-eyed concept in our head that somehow human nature is going to change overnight if we make these kinds of economic changes. And by the way, that the sort of evil BS that went on for 300 years or more before white people showed up on the shores of Africa and started loading black people into ships is going to magically change. The white man's life expectancy in the middle of sub-Saharan Africa prior to modern medicine was 30 days, because just like the native people who lived here on this land, those white people had no resistance to the indigenous pestilence that was there.
Yep.
Yeah, and so if you went into the woods in Africa, you got some horrible disease and you died. And that was just the way it was. So without the black chiefs capturing all of those people and delivering them to the coast to be loaded on their ships, there was no slave trade. It was impossible.
Well, and, that's right.
But the thing is, Chief, we seem to think that somehow this kind of terrible urge that humans historically have always had, that somehow we change it because we put a factory in Mexico.
Everybody does this. Everybody tends, or how much you try not to, you tend to judge other people by yourself. And you look,
I understand that, but you know, look, when you ignore facts, okay, if I get my credit card statement every month and the number that I owe them keeps going up, right, every single month, and my income isn't going up because the amount of money I make from my job isn't rising at the same rate or faster, right? It's the same sort of stupidity as the headline that's on CNN right now in World News that says UN chief issues a global SOS as new reports say that Pacific sea level rise outstrips the global average. Do you realize that that's impossible? That's physically impossible?
You would think it would be, yeah.
Well, all the oceans are connected together, right? If you take two buckets and put a hose between them with two fittings and you put water in one, is there a difference in the level between the two?
No.
Of course there's not. So if you see that happening, a.k.a. New Orleans, the water level's not going up. The land is going down. All right? Now, if it's going up at the same rate everywhere else, yeah, it's going up. But, all right? But
it does seem like some areas have, for whatever reason, the tides are someplace that some people are affected more than the others, and I don't quite know why that is. But I want to ask you this.
Tides change every now and then, and there is some variation because the moon's orbit is not perfect. It's not perfectly circular.
Yeah, I want to kind of get back real quick to the other stuff. I mean, if you go back to, you know, obviously we have people that are looking for, reparations and all these things, and, you know, whatever. I'm not going to get into that debate, but you look anywhere you want to, in the 19th century, and I'm not so sure it was a really good time to be alive, no matter where the hell you were. You sure as hell didn't want to be digging the I&M Canal. You didn't want to be working in a coal mine. You
probably
sure
didn't
want to
do the Panama Canal not all that long after that either.
No, and you didn't want to be doing the blasting out tunnels and the Asian people who were blasting tunnels in the railroads in the Rockies and Sierra Nevadas. You didn't really want to be working in a manufacturing plant. Sure as hell. First there was slavery, and then there was sharecropping, and on a day-to-day basis, one was probably as bad as the other. I mean, obviously, one was worse because you were owned, but on a day-to-day basis, I think sharecropping was probably as bad, and how miserable your day was. Yet somehow, out of all that mess in the U.S. and in Britain to an extent before us, there were unions, there was this, somehow or another, people fought their way out of that over long periods of time. Talking about when people lived to 25 and 30, you know, 50 years is two generations. I mean, now it's not, you know. But but the idea that somehow or another this would all happen in these other places and somehow people would get this power and make sure that the people here, they go over to China. I think in terms of economics, Carl, I mean, if I were to do a Milton Friedman thing and knew all the stories and was good with his math as he was, I think in a lot of ways, you're going to, if you went to China or Mexico, the amount somebody pays for labor, it's just being paid to other people. I mean, it's not competitive with here, but in China, so the guy's working during the day for all the rice he can eat, but you're also paying off the government money there. So, I mean, it's not going to the labor, yet there's an awful lot of rich people in China, right?
That
never worked a day in their life.
Well, there's an awful lot of rich people in China because there's an awful lot of people in China.
Well, there's an awful lot of graft. I mean, the money's going someplace.
Right.
Same place in Mexico. I mean, you can't tell me that the protection they pay to the gangs for the factory and all the other stuff, those are expenses as well.
Well, and that money does get spent. Yeah.
Well, oh, absolutely. Okay. But I'm saying the idea that maybe it's just another 25 years, which is kind of a long time, but it was a long time here, too, that all of a sudden you're going to have a union in Mexico or someplace. And people,
well,
I mean, I don't know. I mean, at some point, the idea was, certainly when I was in school, the idea was by 2025, which we almost damn near, that why would people want to leave Mexico? There's industry down there, and people are making money.
Well, I understand it, but it didn't happen, did it?
No. Now, the question is, why? And the why is, it appears that criminality and nefarious governments seem to be better and stronger. I mean, look at what's going on now with the wealth in this country, and the idea that for 25 years, and I'm going to a shindig tonight, I'm going to a White Sox game. I wonder if you could call that a shindig, but it's for a guy who's having his 80th birthday. When I first went to him in training floor, he's the one who taught me all about options.
Yeah.
The guy's stone cold brilliant, one of the nicest guys I ever met. He's got his Notre Dame undergrad, his University of Chicago MBA, and his Stanford law degree. I mean, how's that for a
That's a pretty good dossier there, yeah.
When I started, people like that, the smart guys, which I hung around with, I think, they would laugh when they thought government could possibly, you know, like put too much money in for too long, or somehow get around this whole mess. That there was always a comeuppance. If government tried to manipulate a currency, they would just become a bad trader. People thought the market and the world was bigger than these governments. You don't have to look around to China and these other places. These guys have ponied up 7.5% money supply growth for 25 years. They've gotten away with it, and have made some groups of people so damn rich, it's scary. And you would have thought that the inflation, now they lie about the inflation, and people somehow believe them. And oh, by the way, they kept interest rates down for regular people. So if you didn't own any assets, if you just had cash, you didn't get any of this bounty. Where in the 70s you did. And I've got
it's one of the things that fascinates me. Okay, is this curve inversion?
Yeah,
you know, that now is longer than it has ever happened before in history, right? In history when we've tracked such things, and actually, you know, you can go back and chart it. That's never happened before. And the thing that really gets me is that when you look at negative real rates like we have today, they are the reason that not only are the markets, you know, the stock market is extremely sensitive because it has a multiple on valuation. So, you know, you have a price earnings multiple, you have a price to sales ratio. And price to sales and price to earnings almost always greater than one, so there's a multiplier effect. The other side of it is that the same thing is why housing prices are so high. And the idea that you get paid to do this, especially when you can do it institutionally, even if on a small scale. So if you're you're a small landlord, you're doing short-term rentals, you know, here in the Smoky Mountains area, whatever have you. The distortions that get put into the system by this, and people say, well, you know, but this guy's making a bunch of dough. What's the problem with that? Everybody's fat, dumb, and happy. He spends the dough that he makes in the local economy. This is a good thing, right? And my answer to that is, yeah, except for one problem. All the externalities that he imposes, the trash load on the waste system, the fact that he's got six people. Six people in a septic system that's rated for two. So he's poisoning the watershed. By the way, you'll get away with that for a while, but eventually you won't get away with it, and it will take quite a long time before it shows up. But when it does, it's going to be really bad. And the bigger problem with doing that, which nobody wants to talk about, but is a serious issue, is that if you look at the facts, modern medicine isn't where we got all the endemic diseases wiped out. It didn't come from vaccines and things like this. It came from cleaning up the water and waste supplies.
Oh, God, yeah. Hey, real quick, we have. I was going to mention, when you talked about, and we'll tee this up a little on Friday, if all kinds of other stuff doesn't happen. I think Kenny's coming on today, so maybe if you, I think he's doing good. But my question is, why you talked about competition?
Yeah.
When your credit card rates are 25 and you got a bank that's paying zero, why don't medium-sized banks or even small banks say, okay, I'm going to issue credit cards to our best people that all have a 650 credit rating, and we're going to charge 8. We're getting people's money for zero. Why is there no competition there? Because you mentioned that earlier.
Chief, I don't know. And I'll tell you, it's not even the small banks.
Actually, a couple credit unions do, by the way.
I was going to say, one of the things that surprises me is, I have a credit union account here because over my years, my average lifetime in an actual bank before they do something that torques me off to the point that I tell them to stick it and go get all my money and take it somewhere else, usually about 18 months. Okay, and historically, that's been the case. MCS was one of the exceptions. We ran for pretty much the whole time that the corporation was a large and growing concern, without Saul getting me angry enough that I told him to go stick it in his butt. But there were a couple times it got close. They pestered me constantly to borrow money from them, and I kept turning them down because I knew exactly where this could go if I made a mistake. But the thing is that credit unions, I've still got my credit union account down in Florida, even though it's not very active. You would think that Eglin Federal down there and ORNL up here would be like, you know what, we only have to pay with a 5% IRX, we can get away with paying 4% on CDs, and people are still doing them. We can give you a credit card 9.
Yeah. All right. We got a dash, but I'll talk to you this morning. We'll tee this up on Friday because there's huge swaths of where competition should be there, and it's not.
It's missing. Yeah, it's just not
just,
there.
It's just missing. S&P futures up 1, NASDAQ futures up 14. Be right back with Joel and Cannon. Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. As you all know, the broad markets, especially tech, have been hot for a while. Lots of reasons. New technology, small fixed income returns, a lot of Fed cash, maybe some good management. Recently, however, the rates on fixed income investments, even U.S. Treasury, have risen from the very low levels. Treasuries are more attractive. There might even be some interesting bonds out there. Also, the bull run has some leading stocks with historically high valuations, maybe making long-only positions a little riskier. So what to do? I think the answer is flexibility. The market may keep going higher. It may not. It could even go down. Is fixed income a thought for some part of the portfolio? Rates are not zero anymore. You may want to protect some gains. Think about some rebalancing. Address some growing concentration issues. Maybe thinking about commodities. We at PTI may have a solution just right for you. Open an account at PTI Pro Direct, PTI's online trading platform using the Interactive Broker high-end platform. There you will find competitive rates and solid execution across all product lines and traditionally high interest on money balances. In addition, at any time you can seamlessly decide for fixed income investments to access Dan Janitas at Kratos Capital for management services. Dan and his team work tirelessly to achieve the highest returns they can, whatever risk category you are comfortable with. You can also quickly access my team for investment services and a wide array of investment strategies on the security or commodity side, protective strategies, concentration issues, or straight long. In one place, you'll be able to be flexible and ride whatever the future market holds with people you are used to hearing and trusting every day. Need help? You got it. Don't need help? That's okay, too. You'll have a great self-management platform with help always available. This market can change on a dime. I believe, like everyone else, having the right people there if needed is the way to go. Call me at 312-663-4310 or email me at tom@ptisecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tomo Ricardo on the board. S&P futures, we just snapped at a plus here, +$2 on the S&Ps and +18 on the NASDAQ. We were down even like 2 minutes ago. Over in Europe, we've got DAX up 45.2%, FTSE up 24.3%, CAC around down 19 cents. So let's call that one flat. Over in Asia, these guys have been volatile. Nikkei up 178.5%, Hang Seng up 75.4%. Shanghai down 7.2%. So that's those guys continue to go seemingly in opposite directions most days, which is sort of weird. And their Shanghai still continues to not move anywhere. It's this 2850 buried there. Oil Down 40 cents, 77.02. Brent down 36 cents, 81.07. Still have people crying for this massive oil rally with wars and stuff, and it's just not happening. Thank God. Natural gas down 2 cents, 193. Again, we're supposed to have a cold winter. Natural gas goes down every day. That's pretty odd. We have gold down 850, but still 25.46. Hanging his middle 2500s. Silver down 3 cents. 29.97, under 30 bucks. It went over 30, and whenever it does, seems like it wants to come right back. And we have copper unchanged at 422. FX, we're up to almost at 112 on the euro, so euro continues to creep up a little bit every day. Pound, same way, 132. So the dollar continues to multi-month highs on both the euro and the pound. Japan is at 144.65. Crypto, down 980, 62,462. That's Bitcoin crypto. Yesterday, again, Dow was up 65 for a record. S&Ps were down 17 and NASDAQ down 152. So NASDAQ was down almost a full percent. What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
Morning, Chief. Can you hear me?
Oh, yep. There we go. Yep. There we go. My bad.
Morning. It's currently 6:35 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. 79 degrees right now with a high of 94. Partly sunny and hot, becoming breezy this afternoon with a strong thunderstorm in spots late. Watch for flash flooding and hail. Tonight, partly cloudy, warm, and humid with a low of 73 degrees. On to Phoenix, Arizona, 83 degrees right now with a high of 110. Partly sunny and hot. Heat will be dangerous, so minimize or try to minimize outdoor activity. Tonight will be partly cloudy and warm with a low of 83 degrees. On to traffic in Chicago, Iman Kennedy from Monroe's 20 minutes. We're looking at 49 minutes. Inbound Eden is from Lane Cook. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, 31 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 27 minutes. And Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, another 27 minutes. Lastly, sports. The MLB yesterday, the Cubs beat the Pirates 18-8, which is very good news. But the White Sox lose to the Tigers 6-3. Today, we got a back-to-back game with the Cubs. Cubs versus Pirates at 5:40 p.m. The White Sox play the Rangers at 7:10 p.m. And the Diamondbacks play the Mets at 8:40 p.m. That's all I got for you, Chief.
Do we have Joel?
We do. Good morning, Chief.
How are you, bud? How are you?
You know, I never bring breaking news to this show.
You always do.
I have some breaking. Are you sitting down?
Yeah.
NVIDIA has earnings tomorrow after the close.
There you go.
Yep.
And they always come up with a great story. And the guy, the CEO, is like the, you know, he's like the two-bit carny huckster. He always comes up and says good stuff, and away they go.
Yep. And I tell this story on my show all the time, and people get, they don't believe me. I haven't been able to confirm it. This doesn't have to do with NVIDIA. It has to do with AMD. AMD, you know who the CEO is, right?
I won't forget the name. I know the face.
Lisa Su.
That's right. Okay.
Okay. When I was on the floor in the late 80s, I used to do the S&P 500 missile index. Remember the missiles?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Spread. Very difficult thing. And I had a clerk on the floor.
500 stocks versus 30? Yeah, I think it's probably pretty hard.
Yeah. This name was Lisa Su. And she went to MIT. But I've tried to get her on my show. No responses, emails. Don't know if it's the same one. That's a pretty common name. But, yeah, going all the way back, they used to try and arb those things. And it was wide. They call them the missiles because they could move like a rocket on you. But
they were the MMI.
Exactly. The missiles.
Was it the major market index?
Yes. I don't know whatever happened to it, but certainly. And we also, do you remember, the knife?
Yeah.
The New York, yeah. Yep, a little bit of New York S&P, knife futures arb. I mean, there wasn't as much volume in the knife, but that was back in the old days where people used to pick up telephones and use hand. You still remember the hand signals, Chief?
Oh, God, yeah. I don't remember them that much. I remember the ones in my pit, but it wasn't like the stock traders that could do the letters and everything else. Those guys were unbelievable.
Oh, well,
and people actually did stock and stuff for people. But no, I can still do, 20-40 put spread quarter bid. I can do that in a second.
Nice. Yeah. I would have problems with that, but I could do, quarter on 50 or,
put
you know,
two fingers up, put, 20,
yeah,
30. And then, put, yep. Puts mean you sweep your forearm, and then you put your finger up like in a BS sign almost, and spread. You put your thumb as a circle, and you have your three fingers in the air. That means spread.
Yep. And remember the symbols for all the houses?
Yeah. You know? I remember Drexel Burnham, because the guy only hired women were the thing for boobs.
We can't talk about that. Chief.
No, well,
this is 2024.
Oh yeah, this is the new world. But there was no political correctness on the floor.
Yeah, or when like you say, who's buying in Goldman Sachs, and you would lift up your ring finger and put gold ring or something. But your listeners probably going to tune out after this. But when I started quoting the S&Ps, it was back around 300, and we used to quote them in nickels, like each handle.
Yeah.
05, 10, 10, 15, 10, 20, 20 a quarter, a quarter bid at 30, nickels. And now, now 1 point. But anyways, the reason I'm talking about this stuff is because I just, the whole market is sitting here on pins and needles for NVIDIA. People are saying, hey, what's your strategy going into it? I have no strategy to trade this thing. I would just look at right now, the 130 area has been an area, whoever wants to lighten up ahead of the report has been using the 130 area, all-time high, just over 140. If they take it down to the yen trade low, then we're all out of business.
Well, the straddle is like 15 bucks. I think that's a little light, actually.
15?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I you know what? The straddles are so hit and miss,
Well, this last couple of years, and the first time ever in my lifetime. Now, the straddle is, when it comes to earnings, the straddle is the market's best guess on how much the stock's going to move, essentially. It's a combination of the call and put at that strike. Okay, so let's put it this way. It's always been astounding to me how spot on the straddle is. And usually, since retail people can't really sell it, professional people can, it's probably a hair high, a hair high over 9 zillion straddles, which you can't do. And generally, if you were able to sell all of them over my whole career, you probably ended up ahead. Even though he probably got spanked pretty bad a few times. Now it seems like every one of them is blowing through, because I do these earnings plays, a lot of them. And I've seen 2 and 3 times straddle on stocks that don't even really move necessarily.
They don't move. I know.
And it's really nuts. Hey, I got a quick story for you, Joel. Regarding the missiles. Again, this was a memo of mine. It was the 30 biggest stocks traded on the Amex, correct?
Yep.
And back in Gulf War I, I was still on the floor, but I did some work for other people. And one of the guys says, hey, it seems to me that the implied volatility in the missile is higher than it is in the stocks that are in the missiles.
Yeah.
So I spent 2 hours going through this is with the Gulf War going on. And I said, you're absolutely right. So what we did was we did a ratio backspread, which, I'm not going to go into that. Basically, it's a position where if the stock moves, you make a lot of money, and if it doesn't, you get drilled by time decay. So what we did is we did one of those backspreads in every single one of the missile stocks and then sold calls and puts in the missiles, because the volatility was higher in the index than it was the individual stock, which never happens. And it turns out we did really well. And everybody's congratulating me and blah, 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 blah. Whenever you make money, it's a pat on the back, right? If you don't, you're an idiot. So I went through the thing. If I would have missed two or three of the stocks, I'd have had a stone cold loser. But guess what the biggest mover was? And if I didn't have that one, I'd been clobbered.
What year was it?
When was Gulf War I? 91, 92.
Some oil stock?
It was American Express.
American Express.
Because they got buried. It was down like 25%. If I didn't have that one, I made almost all my money in American Express, a couple oil companies, and then something else. If I'd have somehow said, those five, don't do those, oh, God, it would have been really bad. You see, when it's like people who do the S&Ps versus the basket. Well, nobody's going to do all 500, but you got to be careful when you get down to 10 or 15. They're the right 10 or 15.
Yeah, and that's why you see, you know, on these rebalances or, you know, yeah. when people get kicked in and kicked out sometimes, you know, it also depends on what index they're coming in about, you know, what was their percentage. It's complicated. My buddy, perhaps I'll get my partner on pre-market prep on, Dennis, to talk about that because he's had some pretty wild imbalance. But, you know, we're holding steady here. I just want to, you know, got to hop here. I just want to, you know, I'm S&P centric. Yep. The big boys are lagging. Okay. We're up near all-time highs. The other 493 are picking up. A lot depends on NVIDIA, but, you know, technically we've calmed down. We had the volatility. You know, you got your three tops at like the 56.65 area in the S&Ps, and then I'm just focusing on last week's low. And you know, you get to these grinding points and these consolidation points, and people don't pay as much attention to consolidation, but it's boring. But always consolidation.
How come we didn't put out the recommendation and do it ourselves the first of the year? Out of all this AI stuff, I'd love to be long IBM this year. I'm not, but boy, it just keeps going, doesn't it?
I was just, when you said that one stock, I was thinking about Beamer. I know. I was thinking about too. Okay.
All right. Take care, buddy.
And we'll talk later on.
All right. Ricky, Bye. Do we have Kenny?
Yep. We do.
Hey, bud. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Boy, you sound absolutely loud and clear.
Well, thank you very much. I'm trying to be as loud and clear as I can be. What's going on?
Well, look at the bright side. You're not one of the guys that went up for 3 days in the space station and now another 6 months.
They're up there for 6 months. I know. Isn't that crazy?
Is that two guys, or is that a guy and a girl?
Yeah. It's a guy and a girl. And now they have these extra two people up there. What do they do about food? What do they do about... I mean, it's very interesting, you know, to think about all the implications, what that means, two extra people on there for 6 months.
I thought somebody shipped a supply ship, made it up there, which a bunch of TP poo bags and food.
Yeah. Yeah, I would imagine they did, right? They
must. I'm sitting there going, I don't know if I'd really have the stones to ever do the ride up, but I sure wouldn't want to spend 6 months.
Can you imagine?
Oh, God.
Anyway, it's going to be interesting to see how Elon Musk comes to the rescue, right? Boeing is not having a good time of it lately. And actually, there were a couple of people from the Boeing, from Boeing itself that were lamenting about, Elon Musk having to come and rescue these people from the spaceship, that they couldn't do it, you know?
Well, is our fallback position the Russians?
I don't know.
Well, you know,
before
we had Musk and these guys, they stopped the shuttle program with people up there, counting on the Russians to go get them.
Yeah, I know that. Yeah, no, I know. And, I guess the Russians could go there because the Russians connect to the space shuttle, don't they?
Yeah.
I mean, to the space station.
Yeah, half the guys up there are Russian all the time.
Right, but I didn't know if the Russians go up on their own or if they go up like with us.
I think sometimes they go and sometimes we go. Yeah.
On their own, yeah, they connect.
What is your view? I don't think there's any. I'm not doing any mutiny here. I'm just saying, what is your view of the fact that the Fed has started growing the money supply again? Has already got the funds rate really down to 5. So when they cut. I mean, thanks for the flash, Gordon. I mean, it's already there.
Right.
This is so, not to mention they're a week later on their money supply number for July. what is going on here? It's so obvious to everybody, nobody even talks about it. And then you had the Fed guy comes out and lists 10 reasons for inflation, never once said money supply.
Right. They never once say it because then they'll give away their secret, right? They don't want anyone to, as if we don't know, right, what the issue is here. But they're also trying to create that soft landing, right, that issue about not wanting it to be a crash landing, which I still think it has the potential to be, by the way.
When you define, in this world of everybody's got their own definitions and everybody, what do you define a crash landing?
Well, I think that a crash landing to me, although it may not be as bad as it was, a crash landing to me was going to be if they start to cut rates and inflation rears its ugly head again and the Fed's forced to raise rates, that's going to be a crash landing, right? Okay. That's going to be a crash landing.
You mean a policy reversal in your mind?
A policy reversal would create a crash landing, right? And if they cut, say 25 in September, and then they decide to cut 50 in November, I think that could be a crash landing too, because that would send a very different message. Even if they cut 50 in September, I think it sends a different message that they're worried about the economy slowing way too much, too quickly, and that would end up being a crash landing. So I think they have to walk a very fine line here. I think he's got to stick with the 25 he said. I think he can't get bullied around. I think I think he'll be okay. But they, at this point, I think if they change policy, if they cut rates too much, or if inflation starts to rear its ugly head, then we get a crash landing.
How do we have $70,000 tuitions and $90 billion in student loan debts, and that 1% of the people have any idea what the money supply and what all this stuff is? How these guys can buffalo the population to this extent? I can't believe it.
Because they don't talk about it. Money supply is not necessarily something that, you know, the average American is going to talk about. Certainly economists should be talking about the money supply. You're really the only one. Every time I don't hear them talking about it on Bloomberg. I don't hear them talking about it on Fox Business or even on CNBC. I just don't hear it. People don't want to talk about the money supply, right? Because they don't want to talk about the big elephant in the room.
Well, as my nephew told me, he's got opinions. Everything,
don't they all?
Yeah, he goes, everything about Milton Friedman has been disproved. I said, say what? He goes, yeah, everything the guy said has turned out to be wrong. And I go, I don't know about that necessarily at all. You mean all the research that he did, that he got a Nobel Prize on money supply numbers in the 1890s and stuff, that's all wrong? I don't mean that. No, in other words, none of the real research is wrong. No. You know, people have these opinions on stuff. It's funny, Kenny. Last week they were talking about inflation in Egypt, I don't know Egypt from God knows where. So I hit my little Google here and I go, Egyptian inflation rate, and it's like 50-60%.
Yeah.
And I look at inflation or Egyptian money supply, it's up 50-60%. I mean, duh.
Right.
I mean, it's how does somebody just say, oh no, that's right? What do you mean it's not right? It's right there.
Right. Right, but see, again, they don't talk about it. It's not something you don't see headlines in the Wall Street Journal talking about the money supply. You just don't. Or at least if you do, they're buried on, you know, one of the back pages.
How is it length of time? You could never have gotten away with this in 1995 because everybody was all the inflation thing in those days was too recent in the rearview mirror.
Right.
People would have known right away what was happening. And they remember, everybody remembers Volcker. Nobody remembers what he did. He dropped the money supply.
Right. He dropped the money supply. Well, yeah. they remember him for one thing, for sure, you know, that he pushed rates to 20%. He had to. But then he dropped the money supply, right?
I don't know that he ever actually had to do that. But that's another discussion on that, is the way I feel. And you can tell me I'm nuts, and I might be. But I don't know that something was weird what he was doing. He was also trying to put savings and loans out of business, I think, which is weird.
Right. Well, there was the big savings and loan crisis. Had to be, when was that? Had to be in the early 80s, right?
Yeah, it was the Resolution Trust.
Right, the Resolution Trust.
Well, when you force people for Kenny, we're somewhat younger, but God, when I was a kid, every area had a savings and loan. You got 3% on your passbook. The mortgage was 6, and the 3% spread, which isn't bad for a business. The buildings, the people, the Little League uniforms, everybody was happy. And all of a sudden, with Volcker in there, the savings loan is paying 9 and they're getting 6, or they're paying 12 and they're getting 6, and it doesn't take a strong math major to figure out that duck doesn't hunt.
Right, that turns upside down very quickly.
Very quickly. So I don't know that he necessarily had to do that. I think he already had. You know what, actually, I'll run this for a second. You know how people get on the air and they talk about wage push inflation?
Yep.
I'm going to say, Kenny, that never happened but once. And the once, because this is right when I was doing all this stuff, so I mean, I have a pretty reasonable memory on this stuff. When you talk about when I was at Pullman, all the unions, all the bigger unions had essentially cost of living clauses in their contracts.
Right.
This is 1977, 8-ish. But they didn't start out that way. I mean, the inflation started really in 1970, 71, when we went off the gold standard in 68, right? Started pouring money in the system. It already was creeping in. So for years, the unions were the part that went over the fence last. And finally, when contracts came up, I mean, they didn't just demand new contracts. It took 3, 4, 5 years for contracts to come up, and everybody's getting buried with this inflation. Plus, you had how many different tax brackets? So, you know, even if you did get a raise, all you did was pay more taxes.
Right.
So, but all of a sudden, they get these CPI, you know, adjusted, which that's what I used to do at Pullman, is adjust everybody's stuff based on the CPI. Well, there was a time. There's also this incredible lag. I mean, you've been on the show enough, and all I did was rag constantly about, even if you're legit, which I don't think they are now, the CPI somehow has this lag to it, and I don't quite know why when they try and get the stuff pretty current, but there was a lag. So there was inflation back in those days, long before anybody said there was, and of course they blamed it all on the Arabs with their oil embargo and stuff, which was untrue. But as time went by, the inflation numbers that were coming out of the CPI, and your buddy of mine, Dr. J, we used to ride to work together, and I said, Jan, I don't think there is any inflation anymore. He goes, there isn't. But for 6 months, it kept percolating through the CPI numbers.
Right.
And then, so I would have to, I wasn't at Pullman anymore, but people were still getting raises based on those cost of living numbers. But for maybe a 6 to 12 month period, I think increased wages forced because of the CPI numbers that were lagging actually did force prices to go up. Because labor at that point, the lag was helping them, not hurting them. But right. other than then, there's nobody that doesn't raise prices before they give somebody a raise.
Agreed.
I mean, you think Home Depot doesn't raise the price the second they can? And oh, by the way, if the cashier says I'm quitting, if you don't give me another dollar, maybe right. they'll give them the other buck. They're not ahead right. of the game.
Right. No, not at all. Not at all. They are completely ahead of the game. They're not. They're certainly not doing it backwards. Doesn't make sense for them to do it backwards.
So, what do you make of? Are you a fan or not fan of making a move before an election or something? Seems like they've done that before, isn't it? I mean, I don't know if it's that rare.
Making a move? Who?
The Fed.
Who
the Fed.
No, I don't think they should. I am not a fan of that. I said if the Fed hadn't made a move by May, they shouldn't make one until after the election. Because I was always in the camp that, you know, within that 6 month window, the Fed should, unless there was a complete disaster, that the Fed shouldn't do anything for fear of being viewed as partisan, right? So now they wait till 5 weeks before the election. So do I think it's partisan? I do. Because do I think the economy is going off the edge? I don't. Do I think 5.25% rates right now are usurious? Absolutely not. You and I have talked about that. But the fact that they're cutting rates 5 weeks before the election, to me, feels suspect.
Well, they already have cut them. They're already, I mean, we're getting 5.1 at the auction, and 3 months ago we were getting 5.5.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, they're cutting them, right, in anticipation of the Fed making that move, right? They've made it. They've basically now taken that question off the table. At this point, if they don't cut by 25 basis points, I think it's going to be a real problem. If they suddenly say in September, nah, you know, we're going to wait another meeting, I think the algos will go into meltdown mode.
Well, do you think anybody is not I'm going to say most people have figured out how they were going to vote already. I did read this thing. Somebody sent a thing into, and this is not, we're not talking politics here, but it was something that I had not heard of before, Kenny. It had to do with just the age, the demographics.
Yeah.
And how they're working against Trump. And how, you know, a lot of older people are a lot more conservative, they seem to be. And how, because of the COVID and for whatever reason, we had all kinds of people dying. I'm not going to be pinning on COVID shots or whatever, but it seems like the death rates at a lot of levels seem to be pretty high lately. Maybe it's just people around. But the guy was talking about how many people over the age of whatever have died in the last 4 years.
Right.
And how many young people,
all kinds of people
have piled on, you know, essentially gotten got 18 and now can vote. And
I'm not debating that there hasn't been a shift. There certainly has been a shift. Part of that is because of, you know, all the people that died during COVID. I agree. But I'm not sure that the majority of people yet have made up their minds. I'm really not. I hope you're right. I keep wavering on that. I think there's, you know, the last couple of days now, there's been, they're going to really turn up the attacks, both sides, by the way, over the next 5 or 6 weeks for sure. But, you know, we got the debate that's coming on September 10th. She refused to do a Fox one on the 7th, so they're going to do the ABC one on the 10th. I'm just curious, though, whether or not You know, the Democratic Party is actually going to let her do a debate without actually knowing every single question that they're going to ask her ahead of time, right? Because I don't think they're going to. I think they're going to demand that she knows.
Well, she's not as good as, if he didn't like it, just not answer it and start talking about Hillary.
Right. Right. You know, somebody put a question out on Twitter yesterday. I thought it was brilliant. You know, if you're voting for Kamala Harris, tell me why you're voting for Kamala Harris without saying anything about Trump, right? It just tells me why you support Kamala Harris.
Well, that's but that is, Kenny, you've been on the show forever. The question is not what the vote is now, is how did we get here?
Right.
Out of 330 million people, how are these the two?
Right. I don't know. That's a whole nother. That's a whole nother.
Well, you know, it's funny. I was, we're going to dash here in a second, but it looks like Indian Company number one is heading out downstairs.
I was going to say, what the hell's going on by you?
I think there must be an expressway crash. Those guys do all the expressway work. A lot of the stuff that you've seen happening, and you know, the people on the show, and you included, I mean, Carl probably more than most, has drilled me into looking at these long-term numbers.
Yeah.
And if you look at the degradation, I think, of inflation, you look at the stuff that with medical science, you look at their pickup and percentage of the economy, when people might say that the medical care isn't any better than it was in 2000. When I say medical care, clearly the innovation in certain types of surgeries and certain types of drugs is way higher, but I think your ability to get a stitch done is nowhere near as good as it was in 2000. You know?
Right.
But I'm saying, if your time frame is that 24 years, we've had exactly 12 years of Democrats and 12 years of Republicans. And if you look at the numbers, you can't tell the difference. One came in and where the other. The driving, you know, thrust toward making some people rich and other people poor has been there for 25 years. It doesn't matter if it was Obama or was Bush or anybody. Nothing changes.
Right.
You know, and yet people say, oh, no, if this person's in, if that person's in. I mean, I think for my industry, for my firm, Trump is much more likely to get rid of all the ridiculous regulations than she is.
1,000%.
But I also like the fact that I look at her, when I say her background, her financial background, and she's had her money in basically S&Ps for 10 years. We don't have any of this crap, it doesn't seem, of people trading while they're in office and all the other stuff that other people. In other words, there's things to like about her and some things to like about him when you get away from the personalities.
I agree. But there's also, when you look at the policy, she'd impose more regulation.
Well, that's right. I'm not happy.
Taxes and this whole unrealized. I'm not even sure how this conversation about unrealized tax gains is even real. I mean, how can they even be talking about taxing people on unrealized gains is beyond me.
Well, it probably has to do, maybe her definitions aren't even right, okay? Maybe she should come on Stocks and Jocks and learn something. This idea that you've driven these stocks up to the astronomical level, and now you have people getting, the lady who bought Mark Cuban's team, she got Las Vegas Sands, from her dad, and didn't have to pay any taxes?
Right.
Because I think that as high as the market is, the idea of people paying zero taxes and that capital gain is to me is kind of bizarre.
Okay, wait. That's not what I mean, though.
I know. I'm saying, are we sure that? But you know what? Who was on the air the other day? I said, you know, professional traders have done that since 1984.
In what sense? What do you mean?
I mean, we pay mark to market.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, but what I'm talking about is she's talking about unrealized gains on, you know, if your house goes up $100,000 next year, you owe her $25,000 in taxes.
Well, that's therein lies the rub.
Right.
If you and I were going to do this, even I, who doesn't like the idea that nobody pays taxes on this generational wealth shift, Kenny, I'm not about to say that somebody whose dad got IBM at a buck and now it's, you know, 200 has to pay on the whole 200. You've got to put some sort of a CPI thing in there somewhere. You've got to say, okay, and today's dollars, you know, that would be 90 bucks, and you only got to pay on 100, not 200. I mean, you got to do something. You can't just say the whole number.
I don't disagree about that. So there should be some modification to that. Yes, that's fine. But I'm just talking about this whole other thing. If I understand it correctly, these unrealized, you know, taxing someone on gains that you don't even take yet, right? It's one thing if your father dies and leaves you the IBM and he bought it at a dollar and now it's worth $200. You're right. There should be some tax on that. Whether, like you said, adjust it for CPI, make it now as if it were 90, so now you owe taxes on 100 versus
200. Yeah, I'm not going to give somebody 35% or something like that. No way. No, you know that.
Right. It's got to be something. I agree. That's okay. I don't necessarily have a problem with that. But I have a problem with, you know, them coming in and just taxing you on every asset you have.
I can't imagine that they.
How could they possibly do that?
I don't know. You know they used to do that a lot. One of my first clients, Hal's probably with us, but he'll probably like this story as well. One of my first clients was a massive developer in Scottsdale. He was like the number two guy behind Keating, although he got out of a bunch of his stuff and didn't go to jail like Keating. so that he had that part going for him. But I was allegedly the only Democrat that ever was in his house.
Yeah.
Can you imagine that? When he had this gorgeous place. No. He had 57 properties going at one time before the crash, you know, whatever it was, 82. But he left the country and got rid of his citizenship because he was afraid of the estate taxes.
Right.
Estate taxes were, they'd come in and they'd say, you know, Your dad dies and somebody walks in and goes, Kenny, that picture's worth $800,000.
Right.
We want, you know, 50% or whatever the hell estate tax is. And you go, so you go sell it at auction for $50.
Right.
They want $400,000.
Right.
And this dude's wife had befriended this, obviously a lot of Native Americans out in Arizona, had befriended this guy who was a fledgling young artist and they fed him. And I don't know if he lived there for a while or what he did. But anyway, the dude, they had probably 25, 30 of his pieces, sculptures and paintings.
Yeah.
And now the guy's starting to catch some fire. And this guy was paranoid that these estate dudes would come in and say, all these paintings are now worth $250,000. You owe us, you know, 125 times 50 or something.
Right.
But you know what? I don't know if you ever heard this story. There was a guy. When the bald eagles became an endangered species,
yep.
You can't do anything with endangered species, right? So,
right.
So there was this famous taxidermist. I remember reading this story. It was so hilarious. I remembered it. So the guy had a stuffed bald eagle from this famous taxidermist. And the IRS said to him, that's worth $500,000. The guy goes, I can't sell it. We don't care.
Right.
Can you imagine? Anyway, so I can't believe that she has anywhere near the idea that she's going to walk up to your 57 Corvette and you bought for $10,000, it's now worth 30, saying you owe me 10. She can't mean that.
Well, that's what I would say. But the fact that they're even tossing that around there and putting it out there as part of her policy, honestly, is stupid to me. It's just stupid.
Well, but it comes down to, but if you're in the stock business, you know, if you trade a lot, I mean, I think you know this. I'm not going to dig into your personal stuff.
Yeah.
You could elect to be taxed as a professional and pay mark to market, and not the other way.
Yeah, right. You could be. That's not me, but you could be. Yes.
I mean, on the trading floor, the biggest scrunch of cash out of the trading floor was 1984, when people never paid any taxes, and all of a sudden they had to.
Yeah.
You remember that? Yeah. Those are the good old days, Kenny. Kenny, you're 25 years old. You're making $100,000 a year. And you don't pay any taxes. Beers are a buck, and a nice apartment's $300. Could you possibly be any more the king of the world?
That wasn't my life, although it sounds great.
You know, it wasn't mine either. I was older, and I always had people working for me. But I tell you what, a lot of guys had a lot of fun.
Yeah, tell me about it. All right, I got to
take care of yourself. SP Futures down 3, NASDAQ Futures down 10. Do we have Professor Hal?
Yeah.
Hey, how you doing?
All right. Well, so what'd you think of all that? I can't believe that there's going to be some sort of a wealth tax kind of thing, but I wouldn't be surprised if the thing about the generational shift does change at some point.
Were you referring to the
where if your dad dies, you get his stock at his basis, not the current basis, not where he bought it.
Yeah. Well, to me,
You know, I've had these kind of discussions with faculty, on like faculty senate, and at Westminster they were talking about, you know, how we want to disinvest from like things like crude oil and natural gas, and we only want our retirement funds invested in green energies. And you know, if they want to, that's fine, right? If the majority wants to go with that, that's cool. But my point was, at that point when we were having the discussion, crude oil was like getting crushed.
Yeah.
And if you at that moment say we're going to disinvest in crude oil and we're going to move into other things, at that moment, that's when you lock in those losses. And I don't think any of my colleagues understood that. So to me, everybody, this whole idea that, you know, when I watch the finance shows, you know, CNBC or Fox Business Network, and they're talking about how much money they made today, I'm like, you didn't make any money today. You don't make any money until you sell your stock, and then you got to pay a capital gains tax, right? So you don't, I mean, it's really just paper. I mean, it's not even paper, it's air, right?
You do realize you're talking to a trader who thinks totally the opposite.
Yeah, I don't think anybody has any wealth until they sell it, because what happens the next day? What happens if the markets drop 50% the next day? What happened to all that wealth you're celebrating on Monday? It's all gone on Tuesday,
right? If something's liquid, I'm not talking about, you know, baseball cards and stuff.
Yeah.
Or Babe Ruth jersey. You saw that, didn't you?
Yeah.
$21 million for the Babe Ruth jersey that he supposedly, when he pointed to center field at Wrigley Field, it went for auction, $21 million bucks.
Yeah.
You saw that?
No, I didn't. Huh?
Yeah, it was 2 days ago. The highest.
Oh, it was 2 days ago.
Yeah, the highest.
2 days ago, I'm still recovering from our epic drive.
Oh yeah.
We left at 2 a.m. and got to North Carolina around 2 p.m, and I'm still recovering from that, unpacking and building furniture that we bought. You know, I'm still doing that stuff.
Well, the most cryptic conversation ever. Of course, you know, Dr. J labs me all these interesting people once in a while. So he sends me this guy who's involved in some radio station in it was a big company. It was, you know, they got bought by a big company. And so it was a company I recognized. They were, you know, they were on the New York Stock Exchange. There was options on them. So somehow or another, his mother got the stock. I don't know. You know, I didn't ask how the hell all that happened, but she got all the stock at like $20, and it was trading like 70. So it's the only asset she had. You know, I mean, some money in the bank, maybe. So Jen said, you know, this guy, me, is the best there is at protecting people's stuff and concentration issues and stuff like that, as hard as that is. But I mean, I'm pretty good at it. It's pretty hard. It's a tough one to do. But so he comes in, and the stock's like 70. And he says, yeah, it's a pretty good idea, blah, blah, blah. And he comes back a week later, and the stock's 60. And he says, well, you know, we got to wait till it goes back to 70. And I go, well, okay, I guess, you know, that's one way of looking at it. And he says, you know, we got this stock at 10. We're still up 50. What are you worried about? And I said, well, in your mind, you're up 50. When you contacted me about this, it was 70. Now it's 60. I think we're down 10. You know, because that's what I've done my whole life, is you mark stuff to market.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, you know, if you're in there for the long-term investment, one of my best buddies, his mom, you know, in those days, whenever you called somebody, you got the mom, so you knew the moms as much as you did your friends, right? Well, she's still alive, I think. She's got to be 100. But I go over to their place, having this big party. She goes, hey, Tommy, Jimmy bought all this Citigroup stock. This is before, you know, it collapsed in 2007. And he says, we're in for the long haul. Does that mean it's a crappy buy? And I go, yeah. if we're in for the long haul, does that mean it's a crappy buy? And I go, yes, it does.
Yeah, those moms, they got a sixth sense. My mom,
without a doubt.
I told you this last week. She would lend me $20 to go on a basketball, our JV basketball trip on the weekend. And then when I got paid on Tuesday, she expected $25.
was she in the mob?
She was a single Mormon mom, you know.
God. Well, there was. You remember the book? Who wrote the thing? Was it Alex Haley wrote Wheels? He wrote. He wrote Airplane too, right? And then he wrote Wheels was the second one, I think. Carl, find out who wrote Airplane and Wheels. I think it was the same guy. But in there, there was a guy for like 25 years would borrow, you know, $40 from a guy on a Wednesday and give him 50 on Friday and payday.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Without any ability to, you know, to. But regards to
that's worse than the credit card companies right now.
Yeah, but
my mother-in-law, she could have put something on a credit card, and I looked at her invoice or something. I don't remember how I saw this, but maybe it was a credit card offer. And she opened up and she goes, "What do you think about this?" And I go, "Mom, the interest rate's 33%. I don't think you should do it." Man.
Well, you know,
she's got pretty good credit, you know.
Yeah. It's unreal. It's unreal. This is a while ago. We had I've always had memberships at Costco and Sam's for the people here at PTI. And I don't know if we need them anymore, but you know, a couple guys get their prescriptions there and stuff, but so I go to get the pay up for the next years at Sam's. And they go, "Hey, if you know you get this credit card, you know, whatever, blah blah blah, you can pay for your stuff today." So I buy, you know, a couple hundred hours worth of stuff for the office, nothing major. And all of a sudden, you know, I don't pay any attention. We don't get the bill, right? And all of a sudden, I get this thing in the mail the next month. Evidently, the building figured out that I was supposed to get the Sam's number, and I get this thing. You know, the $200 is now interest is whatever 20-some%. And oh, by the way, since you missed the payment. It's like $50. I'm going, all right, so it's $60 for not paying $220 or whatever it was 30 days late. You know, so I call them up and I go, "What is this?" And they go, "Oh, I mean," I said, "Tell you what, I'm sending you a check for this amount. I don't want to argue with you. I'm sending you a check. Cancel the card." "What do you mean? We don't want you to cancel the card." "I'm canceling." I go, what do you think $60-some on a $230 bill for 30 days? What's that interest rate?" "What do you mean?" "What do you mean? What do I mean? It's something like 25% times 12. Duh. Anyway, but yeah, it's I just I was mentioning, I don't know if I mentioned with you last week, that Dan Rostenkowski always thought that the capital gains, instead of being a year or over, should be indexed. That was back when people could count on the CPI. But say you could, if somebody buy something today and next August 29th sells it, I don't think there's much of a reason why it pays tax half. And yet if somebody bought a house 50 years ago and now sells it today, I don't think, do they make any money? Really?
Yeah, man. Yeah.
I don't think so.
Definitely.
I mean, so...
Well, I think if Kamala wants to... Kamala? Kamala? I'm too tired to know what her name is. People call me Hal, Hall, Snare, Snar. Yeah. I don't get upset, but that's just me. But yeah, you know, if you want to tax rich people, I think the best way to do it is just they have more transactions. Bill Gates is going to have a lot more transactions than me. He's going to buy a $1 billion yacht. I can't afford to buy a rowboat. If you want to tax the rich, and that's what Kamala wants, why not just have a transaction tax? Pay. You know,
because of transaction,
every transaction, no matter what it is, every transaction
is by definition recessive.
Yeah,
I mean,
well, I don't think so. I mean, if you have, $20 million in transactions in a year, and you're paying 0.5% on those transactions, and I have $25,000 a year in transactions, you're paying a lot more tax than I am.
I don't think it's.
And I'm talking on every transaction.
Well, what transaction don't you pay in?
I'm not talking about final goods and services. I'm talking every transaction.
Like what?
Anything that involves exchange money. You get rid of the tax code altogether. Every transaction that involves the exchange of money.
I'm not
a small 0.5% tax.
I think,
and you will tax the crap out of the rich.
I think it's as simple as just enforcing the law.
But they have all kinds of tax laws in New York City and New York State. And you know, I'm going to miss three things about New York State or New York City. I'm going to miss my in-laws. I love my in-laws to death. My in-laws treated me so well. I didn't mind doing all that work for them. I actually enjoyed it because I got to hang out with my mother-in-law and I really got to know her. I'm going to miss my in-laws. I'm going to miss our church, Brooklyn Tabernacle, and I'm going to miss teaching classes at the Manhattan campus right across the street from that big Macy's. But I'm not going to miss anything else. I mean, I came home from Home Depot one night. Yeah, the customer service is horrible, by the way, in New York City. I come home from Home Depot, and I'm on a thing called a parkway. And you would think if you go the speed limit on a parkway, you'd hit every green light, right? You'd hit green light after green light. I'm on a parkway. I hit every red light, every 100 yards. And I think, and I was doing the speed limit. And I think they do this on purpose in New York City. They want you to hit every red light so that you get upset and you speed through the red lights. There were guys getting over in the left turn lane to go through the red light at 50 miles an hour. They were so upset. I think New York City purposely tortures.
Well, my my recollection, and I didn't spend as much time
money
as there,
out of them.
It's the if you could go up and down Manhattan, and you caught every light was green. You go across town, it took you forever. Hence the movie. Was it? Who was that? Cream, Cross Town Traffic.
Oh yeah, New York City's kind of really weird because the north south streets are very wide. They're like Salt Lake City streets, right? They're very wide, but those east west streets are horrible. They're so skinny and narrow.
Hence the song. Hey, what? So if these guys open the spigot again a little bit here and start pumping more money into the system, which it looks like they're doing.
Well, they've been pumping money into the system
for a few months now.
They've been pumping it.
So what? I mean, what is? Why?
And we're sitting on a chunk of cash right now too, right? We're we're sitting on that big chunk of cash that they dropped in one big bag in the months following the pandemic, right? Yeah.
Well, but now you have the wealth. I was reading here today. This is the stuff that is. I mean, I think if people.
By the way, it's not wealth that was created; it was inflation that was created.
Well,
think it's wealth. Right?
If you've got it, it's wealth.
Yeah.
I mean, get all this. We're now 172,000. Robert Frank wrote this article. The population of crypto millionaires in the world soared 95% over the past year as Bitcoin ETFs and other crypto assets climbed, according to a new report. There are now 172,000 individuals worldwide holding a million or more in crypto assets.
If I had that kind of money, I'd be holding a crypto because the government can't print it, right? It's the new age gold hedge. I mean, inflation hedge. Gold is good.
I hope those people don't lose that. I just have amazing problems with this crypto and the rules and I.
Well, Tom, the young people who like crypto, they're going to be running governments in 20 years. So I think they're going to be opening up crypto to maybe even paying taxes. I think I read an article about one nation making it crypto. I don't remember the exact nation, but they allowed like Bitcoin to pay taxes. So I think as this generation who are open to Bitcoin get older and older older, they're going to widen up Bitcoin as an alternative currency.
Your economic training is in areas that I never really delved into, all the math and all that stuff. So mine was, I don't know why, totally different. Why I took all this stuff at University of Chicago and economic theory and things like that, and I did a lot of work on currencies.
Yeah.
And the rule was every currency at some point is going to drop down to its absolute value. This Bitcoin's worth nothing. It's worth nothing. What's the absolute value of it?
You know, I just don't agree with that. I think the people that came up with those theories, I think the economists throughout history have done a really good job of modeling their story. I think Fisher did a great job of modeling the world of the 1800s, and I think Keynes probably did a great job of modeling the world of the early 20th century. I think Milton Friedman did a great job of modeling the 60s and 50s, but none of them could have foreseen a thing like Bitcoin.
Sure they could have. It's the same as the tulips.
Well, I mean, I don't think they could have envisioned the way it's delivered, how it's decentralized, the technology behind it.
I'm a full pro of all, but here's, we've had this discussion before, a couple minutes of it, then we want to talk more about the markets and stuff and the difference in policies, if there is any, between these candidates. I don't know if there is, but there are certain rules, Al, and I'm not so sure I'm all into the rules and things like that, but there's rules which we sort of live by. When I say sort of, in my industry, we live by. If Al Snar is a client of PTI, and all of a sudden we send your statements to your place in Brooklyn, and they start bouncing back to RBC or to IB,
they're immediately going to call me or my brother and say, hey, what's with this Hal Snar guy? Is he still around? No, I'm gonna,
is he
up,
dead?
It's up to me to track you down and say, oh, here's the new address, blah, blah, blah. And if all of a sudden it's 6 months, or Dan knows this stuff way more than me, it's a certain number of months, if we can't find you, that money's going to the state. All right? And you can get it there. If you call up 2 years from now and you've been, you know, sailing a boat around the world and forgot to tell us, I'll say, hey, your money's at the state. What are you going to do? You can't just, you know, do it. If the bank's the same way. Now, all of a sudden, these guys do this stuff. And not only, you know, there's a great system for doing it, and there's a lot of energy behind the, you know, the whole system and everything. I get all that. But that's not what I'm worried about. The idea that you could have a Bitcoin that you put in $500 2 years ago and you forgot your password, or 10 years ago, that somehow it's going to be there forever and nobody's going to steal it, and they don't have any responsibility to kick that to the state and say, whoever this guy was, here it is. He's got to come get it. And by the way, at least now his password's with the state or something. The idea that they don't have to obey any of this crap now. And the fact that nobody knows that you haven't been there in 10 years is going to find a way to get it, I just don't buy it. I'm too much of a Southsider if this thing is that pure. Oh, don't worry. Other people police it. Bull bleep. Over a long period of time, somebody's going to find a way to steal that stuff.
Yeah, but I think the Bitcoin, the person who buys Bitcoin understands that.
No, they don't. No, they don't.
I think they do. I think the ones that really understand it, they're really into it, I think they're fully aware of that.
Fully aware of what?
And maybe they're okay with the state not having the ability to take possession of it after a certain amount of time. Maybe they're okay with that, right?
I don't think – I deal with most of my clients, in fact, all of them, are really good. I've been at places where it's a little different, Hal. If I went on this today and I were to say, oh, my God, I never do this, but these guys got these turtle eggs in Zimbabwe – and somehow or another, they're a cure for something, and I'm putting everybody in it today, I guarantee you people will chase that thing not knowing what it is. People are in Bitcoin because it's going up.
Here's a story about gold. If my grandpa bought a bunch of gold, and he ends up having dementia, and he forgets that he buried it in the backyard, right?
Yep.
That money is going to be... That gold's going to be taken out of the system until maybe his heirs sell the house and some guy buys the house and decides to put in a pool and he discovers my grandpa's gold.
Or the contractor did.
Yeah. Somebody the contractor, did. Right? The contractor's like, dude, I just found some gold, man. I'm not going to tell the owner.
Or yeah, I'll split it with you. Don't tell anybody.
But, you know, that's analogous to what you said about Bitcoin. If I forget my keys and I lose my Bitcoin somehow, and some guy figures out how to harvest it, isn't that any different than some contractor digging a hole in your grandpa's in your deceased grandpa's former home?
Well, except Bitcoin is telling you that they can't do that. Nobody has access.
Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe there are guys smart enough to figure that out. Maybe there are guys that are smart enough to figure out how to get access to that stuff.
There are people.
Maybe there is.
There's two guys on the show that know way more about it than I do. Maybe not you. The idea that your Bitcoin transactions, every single one can be followed. Most people will tell you, oh, no, I love Bitcoin because no one knows what I'm doing. That's not true.
Yeah.
That's not true at all.
Well, I think it depends on where your Bitcoin is. I think if your Bitcoin's on, like, maybe Blue Wallet, versus, say, Coinbase. I think I had mine on Coinbase until... I don't have very much Bitcoin. I have, like, 0.02% of a coin or something like that.
Just say it. You got $5 million worth.
Well, I took it out of Coinbase. I think it was Coinbase, because Coinbase was freezing people's Bitcoin who were donating to the trucker protest in Canada. So I was like, well, I'm not gonna keep my Bitcoin with a group like that that's going to allow some government to tell me how I can spend my Bitcoin. On which protest I can fund, right? And I wasn't funding that protest in Canada. I just thought it was, if people want to donate to that protest, they should be able to donate to that protest, right? So I took my money out of Coinbase and I put it in a Blue Wallet. So, I mean, I think people are smart enough to make those kinds of decisions. I think the problem with people not being smart enough is because government tends to treat them as kids. If adults are treated like kids, well, they're going to be kids. If you treat people as adults, if you stop saying, hey, we're going to take care of you in old age, well, then maybe an adult might become an adult.
But it's at some and point,
take responsibility for them, himself, I mean, or herself.
I mean, this is a good debate because, the stuff that I – the currency stuff that I read had to do with things like cigarettes being the currency in concentration camps.
Yeah. Well, they're not really a very good currency, though, because –
Well, but I'm saying but there was a value to a cigarette.
Yeah.
To people, you know, because people – I don't like to smoke them, but other people do. So there's a value to it. So you could
say – You don't really want to smoke, you know, greenbacks. Greenbacks, if you smoke a greenback, well, I don't think it's going to taste
good. I don't think there's any question that the fiat currencies are worth less than they were 20, 30, 40 years ago in terms of real value behind them. I mean, I don't think there's anybody – I sure as hell can't make that statement that they are.
Well, the thing that backs the dollar is the fact that the government will inflate. Right.
Well,
debt, right?
Well, except the thing of it, I'm as you know, nobody is a more forceful voice, as much as I can be, against what the government's doing and raising the money supply. That's insane. But the solution isn't something that has nothing behind it. I mean, we still have aircraft carriers, we still have bridges, we still have stuff. I mean,
the thing that really backs Bitcoin is the inability of government to inflate it. That's what really, I think that's
what other
really
people are doing people it. To. Other people are inflating it.
Well, I mean, they're doing it by, you know, putting a power plant on a natural gas, a former natural gas well. And they're using the leak off from the natural gas to power electricity generator to power their computers that mine Bitcoin. So I mean,
what a waste! At least at the end of the day, with a tulip, you had a tulip.
Yeah.
I mean,
but what I'm saying is they are mining it, but there's only so much Bitcoin.
Yeah, but the whole idea of how do you mine money?
Yeah.
I mean, the whole concept.
Well, how do you mine gold? You dig.
That's
for
easy.
It, right?
Well, yeah, but you got some.
Hey, do you know what they what Rothbard called, or maybe historians said? I didn't read, but Rothbard read historians, and he was writing about Columbus's seeking this shortest path to India and China, right? He called it he was seeking adventure capital, right? What was Christopher Columbus looking for? He wasn't looking for something physical. He was looking for knowledge. He was mining the world for the fastest path. He was trying to develop a technology, a route that would get him to China and India faster.
If he stumbled over a bunch of gold along the way, he wasn't going to be too unhappy about it.
Yeah, he was seeking adventure capital, not venture capital, but venture capital, right? Because he wanted to find that route to India and China.
Well,
when you mine gold, when you're mining gold and you're getting this element. Right, when you're getting this element out of the ground, you're mining it. You're putting some effort into it. Well, you're doing the same thing, but kind of in a virtual way with Bitcoin.
Yeah, but it's a virtual way. It's a virtual way. Anyway, SP Futures down.
And it's a job for a mathematician with coding skills, right? I mean, a mining job is a guy with muscles. Bitcoin mining is a guy with muscles in his brain.
The idea of having, first of all, it's not a currency anymore. It's an artificial stock. We care about where it trades, right?
Yeah. Well, that's because it's not being used as payment for taxes. If it could be used as payment for taxes, you'd see all that volatility kind of flush out.
Well, I think it goes
up
because
it's
going
up. I would think that if you could use it to pay taxes and you can use it to buy stuff at Walmart, all that volatility would flush out.
It's S&P futures down 8 and Nasdaq futures down 28. We'll be right back. We'll continue to start talking about... when I did my research on tulips, you know, I didn't care, and I wouldn't have cared back then how much people paid for tulips. As long as it was cash money, worst that could happen is you overpaid. Duh. It's like, you know, I paid for this baseball card, $500, and I found it's only worth $200. Okay, it's not good for me, but it doesn't really hurt anybody else. But the progression is now the tulips, which really are worth nothing because they're a flower, they're now traded on exchanges, and oh, by the way, you can margin. You can borrow money to buy them. That's the danger. I mean, I don't care if somebody pays $62,000 for Bitcoin. I care if somebody lends him $30,000 to buy it. That's a problem, because if it goes the other way, it can affect other people, right? Yeah. I mean, if there's no borrowing on it, I could care less. But my job, unfortunately, but the bad part of it is to watch out for holes in the road for my clients, so they don't have to.
Yeah,
and well, I'm saying this thing to me looks like it could be a big pothole in the road someday.
Yeah. Well, the borrowing part of it, the margin part of it, is because the Federal Reserve makes interest rates artificially cheap, makes credit cheap, and then inflates the currency and creates inflation.
The borrowing part is somebody allows most of it.
Right?
Somebody allows you to, if they're going to buy one Bitcoin, somebody's going to say, "I'll give you half the money. I'll lend it to you." That's a problem. It could be a problem. Yeah. It's not yet. Actually, it kind of was when the guy went under, right? You have the Bahamas S&P futures up.
Well, but that's going on with real estate and Twitter and stocks.
I get it. I mean, margin is always a problem. But I'm saying if it's something, at the end of the day, I mean, if a trucking company goes under, at least you have a few trucks, right?
Yeah.
S&P futures down 8, NASDAQ futures down 30. Be right back.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now.
Hear ye, hear ye. The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air.
Hello, and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Al. Carter on the board. S&P futures now down 10. We busted into the plus there for a minute. Now we're back the other way. NASDAQ futures down 37. We have the Dow futures down 50. I don't really see anything crazed in the Dow. I got Amgen down a buck 03. I got Salesforce down 3.25. And then we got Visa's up 179. So I mean, you know, it's not crazed here. It's a kind of a slow morning. We're waiting to see what the Fed's going to do and how election plays out. We got everybody back from Jackson Hole, and Ricardo was supposed to get me a press pass out there, but he failed miserably. Just saying. Why did you fail, Ricardo? Where was my press pass?
Press pass?
Press pass.
Press pass. What is that, man?
That means I can walk in with a press pass and I walk right into the Jackson Hole thing or the convention.
Oh, man. Yeah, I was supposed to. My bad, man. Forgot.
Did you ever watch the Three Stooges where they walked in and
yeah.
Moe and Larry got press and Curly goes pull and the guy goes, "Hey, what the hell's that?"
Yeah. I know what you're talking about now. Yeah.
Over in Europe, the DAX up. These guys are moving up a little bit. The DAX up 85.6%, 0.5%. FTSE up 29.3%. CAC around up 2. Call that flat. Matter of fact, it is flat. Asia, we've got the Nikkei up 178.5%. Hang Seng up 75.4%. Shanghai down 7.2%. Shanghai is locked at this 2850 number. That's crazy. Oil down 46 cents, 76.96. Brent down 38 cents, 81.05. Natural gas down 3 cents. Pretty far under $2 here now, $1.92. RBOB unchanged at 228. It made a high to about 250, and it's down 22 cents or so, as gas has been cheaper around here. Libya had altered production, so went up over 77, and it came right back down again. So there's a lot of oil producers in the world, us being probably the biggest now. Gold down $9, $25.45. Silver unchanged, $30.01, hanging over 30 by a thread. Copper unchanged, $4.22. We've got the U.S. dollar, the pound, 2-year high. Dollar is under pressure, 132. I think the Fed is putting money in the system, as Hal's agreed with. I don't think the central banks are with us on this like they were last time. Bitcoin down 1,050 to 62,395. That's maybe because I don't think it's because we're bashing it. Yesterday, S&P was down 17, NASDAQ down 152, but the Dow made a record high up 65 at 41,240. Carter, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Good morning, Chief. It's currently 7:38 here in Chicago, 79 degrees right now with a high of 94, partly sunny and very hot, becoming breezy this afternoon with a strong thunderstorm in spots late, so watch for flash flooding and hail. Tonight will be partly cloudy, warm, and humid with a low of 73 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 85 degrees right now with a high of 110. Partly sunny and hot. Heat will be dangerous, so try to minimize outdoor activity. Tonight will be partly cloudy and warm with a low of 83 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, Amon Kennedy from Monroe's, 29 minutes. Amon Edens from Lane Cook, 54 minutes. Looking at about 48 minutes, Amon Eisenhower from Wolf. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 34 minutes. In Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 37 minutes. Lastly, sports. Yesterday, the Cubs beat the Pirates 18-8, and the White Sox lose to the Tigers 6-3. But today, we got a couple more games. Cubs play the Pirates at 5:40 p.m. The White Sox play the Rangers at 7:10 p.m. And finally, the Diamondbacks play the Mets at 8:40 p.m. But over to you, Chief.
Al, on a sports note, did you see the final play of the Little League World Series?
Oh, I didn't see it, but I saw the headline. I was flipping through, and I, you know, stopped at ESPN, and I think it was the Astros Sunday night game, and apparently there was like a stole base or something.
I think it was an extra inning. Yeah, it's 1-0.
Yeah,
it's Taiwan's losing to Florida, I think.
Yeah.
No, Florida's losing to Taiwan. So yeah. Somehow they got guys on second and third with two outs. So the dude is the ninth batter in the order. Bunts one up the first base side. Starts running. The pitcher comes in, cleanly fields it, turns around and wings it first base, and there's nobody there.
Mm.
So two runs scored, and they win. They lose.
Oh, man.
So the second baseman didn't cover. Yeah. Well, the second baseman didn't cover for whatever reason. Yeah. And not only that, but the pitcher, there's nobody there. He wings the thing. It might have been a little high, but he wings the ball to nobody. I mean, granted, the reflex was you think there's somebody there, but there wasn't. I mean,
he was expecting the guy to be there, right?
Well, yeah, but it's still you know.
In practice, the guy's always there, right? The guy always covers. He's on that base covering.
Yeah, but both guys, I think, were not real happy. I mean, I don't know if they...
Well, I hear those Taiwan pitchers are really good, too.
Well, all those kids
really
are...
Yeah.
All those kids are... I mean, you wouldn't... Well, some of the places... Remember the team from Cuba where the pitcher looked like he was 20?
Well, you know, when I was a kid, I went to a racially diverse elementary school. And... In terms of like Hispanic and white and whatnot, and Native American, and I'll tell you, my Hispanic friends who were from Mexico, dudes had mustaches in 7th, 8th grade.
Yeah.
I didn't get my mustache until I was 25, and to this day I can only grow a goatee. So.
God, well I was on an all-star team and but we were crummy. And the other team, even in Evergreen Park, was better than us, the other all-star team. And they had a pitcher. He was Dutch, and he was 6 foot, and he wasn't 13 yet. And he was pretty tough to hit against. God,
there was this guy named John Jayo in 8th grade, and he had a full beard and mustache. To me, he was pretty intimidating. He was a fully grown man in 8th grade.
Well, that's the problem with recruiting, right, and so forth. You see guys like that when they're 12 or 13 – they're just way ahead of the game. By the time they're 20, they're the same size.
I look literally like I was 16 years old when I was 25. Literally.
I was a pretty late bloomer too.
When I was dating women about my age in my 20s, it was very uncomfortable with my date because people would look at her like, why are you dating a 16-year-old kid?
Yeah, well.
Seriously, I would get carded buying my grandmother's lottery tickets, and I was in my late 20s.
Well, I was big. I always had to go buy the booze for everybody before I was 21.
My brother Rod, on the other hand, he was younger than me, but he could grow a full beard when he was 16, and he was the guy that everybody went to.
One of our buddies, before he was 21, had the full construction outfit with the name tag and the hard hat and the whole bit he always bought for everybody.
Oh.
Hey, so what we have... You know, there's two things kind of always going on. There's this massive change in economic plan, party to party, that people fight back and forth. And yet if you look at the last 25 years, you almost can't tell when somebody leaves office and the other guy comes in.
Yeah.
In terms of policy.
I think Pence
and Bush are kind of like, they're showing you who, I you know, whether you like Trump or not, I mean, from outside the political system, I'm a political independent. I'm looking at it from outside. When I look at Trump, he's a billionaire. He's not a member of the club, right? And I think a lot of the pushback he got from Department of Defense, FBI, a lot of that stuff is because he's an outsider. He doesn't play ball. And it's pretty obvious to me that he's a threat to the status quo in D.C. He's a threat to the federal bureaucracy. Whereas Bush, Obama, Pence, Kamala, Biden, they're all part of this club, right? They're all the political elites. And I think when you look at their policies and their attitudes toward government, I think you see the division. And I think the way they came after Trump was a signal to all these billionaires who are going to throw their hat into the political arena. Like, if you remember, Schultz from Starbucks was going to run for president. He kind of like, he saw what was going on, and he's like, I'm not going to jump into that space. So to me, there's the established political rulers, and that includes Republicans and Democrats. And as a libertarian, I'm kind of like siding with the guy that the state is coming after, right? Because that tells me that this guy isn't a part of this club. I didn't vote for him the first time around. I don't like his tweeting. I think his populist policies do less damage than and his anti-war stance. I think I like those two things. I just don't like his tweeting. I don't like his the way he comes off. I can't stand watching his debates. I cannot take him in a debate. It just drives me nuts watching him in a debate. But the way the state is coming after him, as a libertarian, I'm thinking to myself, man, this guy is not who the state wants. The state wants a guy like Bush. The state wants a guy like Pence. The state wants a person like Kamala or Biden. And with RFK Jr., I was leaning toward RFK Jr., honestly, because of his stance against the government, food, and drug cartel. And he's anti-war. As an anti-war veteran, I was actually leaning toward RFK Jr., seriously.
Well, they all have their views, and the views are that you hear are kind of cleaned. And I think
today's Democratic Party is not JFK Party.
Oh, without a doubt.
It's not the Clinton Party. Today,
they're not my party.
If you really analyze what's going on in the media, there's so many pro CIA, CIA directors and DOD directors that they get paraded around on this media, which makes me think the media is an arm of the state.
Without a doubt.
Yeah. So, and the Democratic Party seems to be like really into that group. And then there's the group of Republicans like Pence and Haley and Bush who can't get enough war. And so I want none of that. I don't want any of that. So I can't vote for a libertarian this year. The guy that's running on the libertarian ticket, he seems to be kind of like a progressive, quote-unquote, libertarian. There's conservative libertarians and there's progressive libertarians. And he's like this progressive libertarian.
Well, whoever lands there, I mean, I think no matter what, the spending has to stop over the taxes.
Oh yeah, spending was incredibly bad. I mean, he grew government just as badly as
that's what
Obama
I'm saying. I don't have.
And he's not talking about reining that in yet. He's not reining that in at all. He's going to continue to spend. But
well, my political dream for somebody would be for somebody to come from the outside, rip a lot of what's going on in Washington out of there.
Yeah.
And, the idea of somebody who was not beholden to either party, maybe an Eisenhower, but then he didn't do much to play golf. Somebody who is not beholden as much to the party, where the party needs them more than they need. I like the idea of Trump, but he had his chance. When you get in those kinds of situations and you are the person from the outside rolling in, and you know, on a minuscule scale, I did something like this. Buddy and I, not a buddy of another traitor, we ran against the slate at the CBOE and won the first time ever somebody had won against the nominated slate.
Wow.
And we were considered rabble rousers, and we had ideas that were a little different. But I didn't.
Contrarians. Yep. Exactly.
But the thing of it is, now you know you are. So yeah. I made sure that if anybody was anybody out having a beer, I was with them, and I said, you know, this kind of stuff we're doing, this isn't working out for people. We got to. You have to be able to convince people, not just be a bull in a china shop. You can't just make enemies. You need to press on your side. You need to go on every Saturday morning, and like Roosevelt did for a half hour, you need to connect with the people themselves. This is what I find wrong in the Veterans Administration.
Well, I think FDR, he benefited from the fact that the press was, you know, very welcoming.
I get what I'm saying. Awesome. You have to make your own.
It was a friendly relationship.
I know, but you have, in my opinion, again, I'm not boys, although I would want the job, nor would anybody give it to me. You have to go directly with your message. You can't be filtering it. The one way to get around the press, say it yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't see either one of these people. This is why I have problems with them. If they really want to tell me something, I don't think either one of them. Either they are capable or not lazy. Write me a 150-word thing saying this is what I'm going to do with drug companies. This is what I'm going to do with patent laws. Write it down. Tell me.
Yeah.
I mean, none of them are going to do that. They're not going to do that. Either one. Either they're too damn lazy, or they don't know how to write, or something.
Well, I think in politics, you don't want to say it because. Well, but now you just alienated a group of voters.
I know,
right?
but look where we are because of it. I mean, you know, you can't be pussyfooting around. I mean, if you're going to change the laws so that somebody doesn't get a 19-year patent and charge people $3,000 for a drug when it costs them 5 hours to make, you're going to have to say it at some point.
Yeah, you know, talking about these drug prices, both Trump and Biden and Kamala. They're okay with the patent laws that create these monopolies. And so government is creating these monopolies.
Yeah.
And these companies are charging monopoly prices. And their solution is not to get rid of the monopoly. Their solution is to cap the prices. Right? That makes absolutely no sense to me.
Well, I think that...
You get rid of the institution that results in the monopoly prices.
Well, the idea that if we give you the patent on penicillin... And the maximum you can charge is four times what it costs you to make penicillin. I could see something like that. It shouldn't be 1,000 times.
Well, I think if in the absence of the you know, I used to be an advocate for patents. I really was an advocate for patents. But after seeing what goes on in patent law and how, and I applied for a patent. I applied for a baby feeder, and I got a patent pending on a zero mess baby feeder, but was denied. I can actually see, you know, some patent lawyers seeing that they're listening. I can see them going and up, looking up my application, going, "Hey, that's a pretty good idea. We have these resources. Let's let's grab that patent.
Yeah,
and run with it. Right, we're going to take this idea and run with it. I don't have the resources to counter that, right? Or you have these guys that buy up these old patents." And they go out and they sue all these people that are applying for patents or have a patent, a new patent, right? And they claim patent infringement, right? So the patent system is completely abused.
And I
think you'd have more innovation. There'd be more competition. There'd be a lot lower prices. And there'd be a lot more, the quality would be much greater if the patent system was heavily reduced or maybe even eliminated.
I would say that if you were trying to have a discussion with 99% of Americans and you were to tell them, we have this thing where if you invent something and it's yours, you get to register it with the government and nobody can use it for a period of time except you. That's going to register with 99% of people. By the way, I'm trying to agree with you here. If you look at the history of patents from day one, they've done more harm than good.
Yeah.
And I would say just give it a whole mess.
I think most people want protection from government.
But you're not going to get the workings of the system is worse for you.
Yeah.
There was a group I did. I don't raise money for people. Somehow or another, I got involved with this group in Joliet. It was a fascinating product. I won't say what the product is. It was some testing of ocean waters and things in the plants and things like that. It was a scanning where you could tell right away if whatever was in the water or whatever liquid it was. It was pretty fascinating. I said, by the way, do you guys have a patent? The lady goes, why would we want a patent? Oh, as soon as you get to the patent law, office, they spread it around and everybody steals it. the whole workings of the system, I'm agreeing with you. I would abolish the whole mess.
Yeah.
That's causing these prices.
How many firms
out there have like a 10,000 patent just waiting for you to put something in there and steal it from you?
Think about what a patent really is, though. It's a permission, right? You have the permission to be the sole supplier of wooden chairs in the kingdom of the United States.
Yes.
Monopoly used to mean that. I mean, the original definition of monopoly was a person who builds boats, for example, has the exclusive right to build the boats for the king in the kingdom. And they get that right because they agree to collect the taxes on behalf of the king.
Well, it wouldn't be a patent on a boat. It would be a patent on one of the the sail pulleys on the boat or something you did different from somebody else.
But what I'm talking about is monopoly. The original meaning of monopoly was a government grant of privilege.
Well,
you were the one got the license.
Doug, Commonwealth Edison, People's Gas, they're all over the place.
Yeah, you got the license to make the boats. You got the license to build the tables. You got the license to build the chairs. In agreement of getting that exclusive right, you agreed to collect the taxes on behalf of the king. That's what monopoly meant.
The people have made out on the patents. We still have them, but the interior light in your car was a little circular thing with the bevels on it.
Yeah.
And it had a patent number on it. One of my buddies, his uncle, invented that. And it dissipated the light more because of the bevels and something. You got more light out of a smaller bulb or something. Nobody cared about that patent enough to steal it, at least for a while. I think he just licensed it to General Motors and Ford, and they gave them like for every one they made, they gave them like 50 cents or something.
Yeah, I think that's a rare case because I think what patents do.
Oh yeah,
it's what government does in general. This is what government does. This is really important for the audience to understand. This is what government does. The government protects a person with the deepest pockets, an investor, a company, an incumbent firm, from their competitors. That's what government.
Without
does.
A doubt.
And so our government is not, our system of government is not.
Well, not every time, if the person plays the game and pays the right people. But if you go back, if you go see a, next time you put your behind in a 67 Oldsmobile or something, if you ever do, look up at the thing and there'll be a patent number on it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's that movie with Greg Kinnear where he invented the blinking, I think he called it the blinking window wiper. And Ford, that kind of re-engineered it and kind of squeezed him out of that space.
Probably.
Yeah.
What?
Those are really, really good. I love Greg.
In terms of the corner that the Fed and the government is into, I mean, we're talking about the tax decreases that Trump put through. They expire in 26,
yeah.
I think. I don't see how either one of those groups extends them to you if we're still in the pickle we're in and how much money we're spending versus taking in.
Well, if you look at corporate tax rates, tax revenues, I tweeted out a chart. And if you look at the trajectory in corporate tax revenues that were being paid out, they were declining pretty rapidly in the 2, 3, 4 years before the corporate part of that legislation was enacted. And then in the year following the corporate tax rates being basically flattened to 21%. They were, the tax rates were variable from like 15 to 39 based on income.
Yeah, but any big company was way above the 15.
Yeah. And then now it's flattened to essentially 21%. And so, if you look at it, you could say, well, if it wasn't for that, those changes in the corporate tax rates, maybe it continued to drop. But you could also make the argument, maybe it was ready to pounce, right? But if you look at the annual percent increases, the annualized percent increases from 2018 on, in 2023, on an annual basis, corporate tax rate revenues are up 16.4% in 2023.
Well, they're making all the money.
Well, so this goes back to this idea of the MOOC-DEEF. It's not the Laffer curve. I don't call it the Laffer curve. It's in the 12th century, an Islamic scholar first made the observation that governments that have low tax rates initially are going to see higher tax revenues than the governments that have high tax rates. And Art Laffer is associated with this relationship, and they call it the Laffer curve, but it really should be called the MOOC-DEEF curve, because it was observed by this Islamic scholar in the 12th century. He's the first one that we know of that observed this, right? So what you're seeing is, I think what you're seeing at a kind of a flatter, kind of a lower tax rate, what happens is, and there's less loophole mining, I think people are, you know, corporations, they're going to pay it, right? And I think what happens is, when you lower tax rates, and New York City could learn this lesson, there's so much tax avoidance in New York City. People, there's a lot of cash under the table in New York City, right? I observed it firsthand. And at lower tax rates, there's less incentives to like hide it legally or maybe even illegally. There's, and so all that stuff comes from out from under the table, and it's all visible. It comes out of the alley, the back alley. There's more legitimate commerce, right? So I think it's really important to maybe look at it from a long-term perspective. Corporate tax revenues are up.
There needs to be some. I'm
21% is not a lot. I don't think it's excessive, and I don't think it's really all that.
I'm not paying 35 if they're paying 21 when the Supreme Court says they're regular people.
Yeah.
I will do this though. Let's talk about this next week, because this is a big. Yeah. I think people who say that flatten out the tax are the people who got money. I mean, we have all kinds of taxes in this country. Most of them are regressive.
Yeah.
And now we have, but I'd be all for raising the corporate rate to regular people rate, and letting them deduct dividends. They shouldn't have to pay twice.
Well, I think what's going to end up happening though is you're going to probably incentivize people to go somewhere where the tax rate's not as high.
What I said is if you let dividends fly out, the reason why you keep it low is because they have to pay twice.
Yeah.
You shouldn't have to pay twice.
Yeah.
I'm saying, what I'm trying to say, we're over time here, but I'm not the genius that says people should pay 35, 34, 31, or whatever the number is, or 25. I'd love it to be 25. I'd love it to be 20, you know. Yeah. But whatever it is, I think everybody has to pay, because everybody who doesn't pay, guess what? I pay more.
Yeah.
And I'm tired of it, to be honest with you. The fact that corporations didn't pay anything when the stuff was over in Europe all those years, guess what? We paid more, or we have a deficit.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, how many people never paid anything for how many years?
Oh, yeah. Well, what I'm saying is, I think the fairest, again, is just on every single transaction that involves money.
I don't buy that because,
small percentage
because of.
And it's not my idea. It's a Wisconsin.
I know, but I think it's I think it's actually a horrible idea, because we do that with payroll taxes. We do that with sales taxes. We're doing it all over the place.
Well, I'm talking about one small, very predictable percentage rate on every transaction.
All right, so you're gonna drop
and eliminate all other taxes. Eliminate all other taxes.
Okay, but the person
any transaction involving money. A person
who makes $5 million a year doesn't buy any more chicken than somebody who makes $40,000 a year.
They engage in other. I'm not talking about consumer goods. They're buying. They're engaging in transactions, right? Money's exchanging.
So if I bet you $10 on a football game, they get a tax.
Exactly.
Well, we'll discuss this next week.
You sell your sexual services to some dude. You got to pay 0.5% tax, even if it's illegal.
Well, I would hope it would be to a girl, but I think that ship has sailed.
We live in the year 2024.
No, I don't care what year we're in. SP Futures down 21 days. If you're on that fine note, I'll talk to you next week. I might need you Thursday for a bit. I'll talk to you next week.
Okay.
If not Thursday. All right.
That's all, folks.